Talk given Friday, 3rd January 1975. A large proportion of the world regards the Christmas holiday as a time for jollification. You all know what people do. Heaping pleasure upon pleasure. A small portion understand something of the profound significance of this festival. Those who understand and those who can enter into the spirit of it in the deep sense are the ones who know pleasure in its truest and profoundest sense. They know real happiness, that joy of the heart, that peace of the whole being, which just blossoms forth because it is unsought and there is no grasping for pleasure and happiness as such. Pleasure is the gift of the gods. It comes into us through the avenues of sense and also through memory and through our cultural life and development. And insofar as we are truly human, and you know, you understand what it means to be truly human, insofar as we are truly human, there is nothing to obstruct this pleasure, this deep happiness and satisfaction. And on every plane of our being, every single cell of the body, it thrills in response to this happiness. Now this is very important for human living, because the human body is so constructed that pleasure is an essential food for the body. Psychically and spiritually, modern science knows something about this mechanism of pleasure in the body. And the way the chemistry of the body works, if there is right pleasure. Science does not add the word right. I add that word. It is quite possible that before long, science will discover the distinction between pleasure in its usual meaning and what you and I might consider right pleasure. And in this connection, it is very interesting to bear in mind what the Buddha says about entering the various stages of meditation. He repeats this again and again through the discourses. And he says that the whole body is filled with ease, suffused with ease. And he says it is suffused with ease as he mentions each of the different grades of meditation, the first, the second, the third, the fourth, and so on. And he says there is no part of his body which is not suffused with this ease, with this happiness, this blissful state. Now, if we consider this carefully, sensibly, it would be impossible to accuse the great teachers of being killjoys. Far from being killjoys, they were concerned with our happiness and well-being in the supreme sense of the term. And not only were they concerned as people who are just only like ourselves, but as people who had transcended all our difficulties, our problems, our drawbacks, and had realized that happiness in its fullness. They knew what they were talking about, and they were therefore able to give it to others. Not only as a teaching, a philosophical concept, but through showing a way of life that led to this liberation. And now we come to the very interesting counterpart, so to say, of this story. The way to this supreme happiness is to be fully cognizant of the nature of sense happiness, how it arises, how it proceeds, how it ends, and how it is always associated with pain, with difficulty, with sorrow. Dejection. And so on. That is, the way we approach it and seek it through the senses. And they all taught that insofar as we renounce the pursuit of pleasure, the personal, egoistic, violent, fevered pursuit of pleasure, so long as we renounce that pursuit and relinquish all methods and means for obtaining pleasure, does this real happiness fill us? But it is not sufficiently expounded in any of the scriptures, as far as I'm aware, that this real happiness uses precisely the same avenues of happiness as this pleasure which people seek so feverishly. Namely, the senses and our sense functioning. It is through the avenues of the senses that the element of happiness pervades our whole being. If we do not pursue pleasure, either physically or psychologically, then we are quiet within ourselves. And if we are rightly and truly quiet within ourselves, we become intensely sensitive to that which actually is present. Now, note very carefully that in the last few years, that which is actually present the world over seems to be the very reverse of happiness or quietness. There is terrible suffering, misery, violence, evil, almost threatening to engulf most of the human race. There is all that. And if we become intensely sensitive, then how can it be that we can find happiness? Intense sensitivity to the horror that exists in the world, if we are quiet, brings forth compassion out of us. It hurts in the manner which is not conducive to an ill state for us. This extraordinary sympathy of the person who is quiet, poised, and profoundly compassionate, this extraordinary sympathy enables one to know the nature of hurt, to cognize it, but not to be broken by it. In fact, I can then absorb that hurt, fully absorb that hurt. And in that absorption, the miracle of transformation takes place, and the environment somehow or other, I don't know how, but somehow or other, has a force of healing going out into it. That is one aspect of the situation. There is the other, which we might call the positive aspect. If I am quiet and intensely sensitive through that quietness, all my senses are really awake, alive, and functioning for the first time. What happens then? You must experience this. You can't stop this infinite flood of marvel and beauty from the whole cosmos come flooding into your being through sight, through hearing, through touch, through feeling, psychically feeling, through intellectually perceiving, and so on. We must not grasp this happiness and keep it. Nor, on the other hand, must we be so unbalanced and adolescent, immature, as to go spilling the beans, so to say, trying to thrust this happiness down everybody else's throat. We merely annoy them. Just, we must be quiet, calm. We all know the sun gives life, heat, light, and all the rest of it, everything that is necessary for our existence here. The sun doesn't come and thrust all that down our throats. If the sun approached us even a few million miles, we'd be shriveled up. That was the end of us. And in our little way, we literally shrivel up the other person whom we are trying to make happy. Never try to make another person happy. Be happy, be poised, and you radiate peace and happiness. Trust, confidence. Fellow feeling, what the Chinese called Zhen, I don't know whether I'm pronouncing it correctly, but I have seen it written as J-E-N. This fellow feeling, this man-to-man feeling. And this is love. Nothing demanded, nothing expected, nothing hoped. No bondages. Real freedom, real understanding. So you see, the renunciation of this fevered pursuit, the relinquishment of all the world's tools of pleasure, the opening up of our sensitivities, intense sensitivity, and being quiet at the same time. And the dual aspect of the compassion in us which heals the world, and the infinite tide of pleasure, happiness, which floods into our being through our senses. All this comes into being. Herein lies real happiness. If we go stirring up everything, making a turmoil around us in the name of we've got to be jolly now, now the jollifications begin, you see. If we do that sort of thing, we are like the monkey in the zoo, of whom the Dutch keeper said, "Ah, he's got too much ego in his cosmos." But consider, doesn't that apply to most of us human beings? Now there is another serious side to this. We who meet here are concerned with religious living, which means full human living, with bringing the religiousness which lies deeply embedded in our nature to fruition. When that religiousness comes to fruition, we are truly human. The humanity in us has at last flowered out. And it has flowered out not because we have achieved or triumphed at all. But transcendence itself, the totality itself, interplaying with us, unhindered by us, has manifested its glory and beauty. Anything that I may manifest through my effort is like a dark smudge upon the light of infinity. Whatsoever infinity manifests is the eternal reality. The blessing that never ends. A few of the world's great artists, musicians, poets, and others, in their great creations, and they are pretty few in number, comparatively speaking, have manifested this marvel of transcendence coming to fruition. Because in their total giving of themselves to transcendence itself, knowingly or unknowingly, generally unknowingly, their genius was such that through them transcendence found a means of expression. And that is why they are such inspiring things. We hear them again and again, we read them again and again, we see them again and again, and lo and behold, every time there is an upliftment for us. And it is not merely an upliftment which, when the period is over, lets us down and we were back to square one, so to say. It isn't that. We are changed, we are transformed even a little bit, forever, through great art. So now, when the religiousness in us comes to fruition, then this supreme artistry is realized. Not by me, the mortal man, but by the divine craftsman. I, as a mortal, might work like a titan. But the divine craftsman works like the expert jeweler. Nothing clumsy, nothing gigantic about it, but utterly finished, perfect, wonderful. Now, although we are supposed to be interested in this, concerned with it, although we are supposed to try to live the religious life, the question naturally arises, do we in fact do so? Each one of us has to answer that for himself. What are some of the pitfalls when we inquire into this? Perhaps the greatest pitfall is our tendency to measure progress, as we call it. But the measurement of progress is an egoistic act. Have I progressed? Who else? You and I are not thinking of somebody else's progress in this matter. It is possible for me to be so very foolish as to measure somebody else's progress too. That is to say, try to measure it. But coming to fruition as the activity of the immeasurable is itself of an immeasurable nature. If I try to measure how far and how well I'm progressing, I'm confining myself to myself. Therefore, there is no progress in any shape or form. But when we become aware of this, we see, we begin to see the extent to which we are ego-centered, egoistic. These are very subtle things. They are not obvious when put into words, and if the intellect agrees with the words, it seems, oh, well, now I've got it. It's simple. I've understood. I haven't. When I really understand, I can do it quite easily. I don't have to think about it. It just happens. Because whatsoever just happens means that that is completely in tune with the stream of life itself. And life is the power of transcendence manifesting itself in shapes and forms. So as we become aware, just aware of the extent to which we as we are obstructing transcendence, to that extent are we freeing ourselves from bondages within our own nature, and letting transcendence work through us freely. And as this happens, we discover in detail all the subtle ways in which we pursue pleasure. When we get past the very adolescent, very animalish, sometimes horribly brutish pursuit of pleasure, which is violent and evil altogether, when we get past that sort of stage, and as we grow, as we say, we derive pleasure from doing good, helping others, spreading peace, happiness, friendship, etc., etc. Here we must be even more mindful, be very, very careful, because this very subtle element of pleasure seeking for oneself, because it gives us pleasure to do so, we do these things. And it boosts our ego, feeds our vanity. And it all happens behind the scenes, which is worse than if it happens obviously. We can tackle the obvious, but after all, I can't see what is at the back of my head. This is a very subtle thing which takes place. And we must be very sensitive, very mindful, watchful. But watchful not in the sense of being on guard against, because that introduces conflict. And the moment conflict of that sort is introduced, we are stuck in the ambivalent, dualistic, conflicting sphere only. There is no liberation there. Just be intensely sensitive. Yes, this is what is happening. You see, this is actually happening. Be really sensitive to it. Don't imagine it. This is another danger. Because if a person is of a masochistic nature, tending to abase himself, to let himself be hurt in order, because it is good for him, then he will again go wrong. So without any of that, be intensely sensitive to what is happening and awake to it. And that way the transformation takes place within the soul. You see, there is the revelation of God unto God through man stripped of selfness. God is not revealed to me, the mortal. The revelation of transcendence, of God, of the ultimate reality, call it what you will, of the unborn, etc. The revelation of truth, or whatever word you like, is unto itself through each one of us as the instrument. Revelation cannot belong, at least as far as I'm aware, cannot belong to anything less than man. Because it is man who has the capacity for withinness. And it is this capacity for withinness which enables man to be the mirror in which God sees himself. You know, this is not original. I'm not saying anything original. This has been known by the holy ones through the ages. It has been expounded in different ways. For instance, in Hermes Trismegistus, there is that section which says, "And then God the mind created man in his own image, with whom he fell in love, because the child was so exactly like his sire." Now, if you can really, in deep meditation, write enter right into that spirit, you will wake up to the fact that yes, I, the mortal man, am the mirror in which God sees himself reflected, and hence the divine happiness of God. Relate this to, "And God so loved the world that he sent his alone begotten," not only begotten, alone begotten, "to save the world." To save means to salve, to heal, to bring to fruition this spirit. Call it the Buddha nature, call it the Christ consciousness, call it the spark of the divine, use any words you like, provided you understand and can thrill in your inner being to the fact. This which is embodied in us remains peacefully, quietly, patiently, never grasping, never pushing, never hurrying. Why? Because it belongs to eternity, where there's no such thing as grasping, pushing, hurrying. Nothing to achieve. Everything is. Eternal life means this. And it works in us. And so the Son of the Highest, the Most High, salves us in that sense. And so this becomes the mirror through which God sees himself. Understand these things and you will find passages like what to me is one of the most wonderful things in the New Testament, St. John's Gospel, chapters 14 to 17. You'll begin to see light as you never saw light before. Now, O Father, glorify thou me with thine own self, with the glory I had with thee before the world was. It is transcendence which constricts itself, steps down, embodies itself here, maintaining its transcendent, I'm going to use a word which is really a wrong word, standard, because transcendence has no standards, maintaining its transcendent condition somehow, but just waiting patiently in here. So that had the same glory as transcendence itself. And when this has become the purified sinless one, utterly renouncing, utterly relinquishing, holding on to nothing, the perpetual sacrifice. I myself am the sacrificer and the sacrificed. When that happens, then Jesus prays, glorify thou me with thine own self, with the glory I had with thee before the world was. Nothing to do with the planet and so forth. So the crucifixion, the ascension, and the resurrection actually embody the divine happiness . It's put in a form in the Christian religion which is terrific, which is so terrifying, so cathartic for the soul of man, that it frightens away everybody. It makes a good many people disgusted with it and shrink away from it and say, what nonsense, this is horrible. We won't have this sort of stuff, you see. But they don't understand. Actually, the deepest things of any religion are really esoteric things. They should not be, Jesus said, cast not your pearls, etc. I won't say the rest. You see, they should not be thrown out like that. But in terms of totality, in terms of transcendence, there is no separation between what you and I call pain and pleasure, sorrow and joy. There is no separation. Eternity knows neither wounding nor the necessity to heal that wound in terms of time and space. All this is possible of realization by you, by me, in mind and consciousness. These are possibilities of realization in consciousness. And insofar as they are realizations in consciousness, and not merely brilliant ideas or intellectual achievements or anything, as long as they are real realizations in consciousness, they are powers for transformation. This is one of the deep meanings of the powers of the archangels and the angels and so forth. These are the archangels, the things which happen in your consciousness. Buddhism has it with its Dhyani Buddhas, for example, and they are consorts. Every Dhyani Buddha has his consort. The consort, the negative aspect symbolizing power at work, nurturing, sustaining. The male aspect signifying power which fecundates by inspiration, by influence. You see, this whole universe shows an activity of interfluence. We are not awake to it. We don't know anything about it. We are so tied up with bricks and bats and stuff which just doesn't belong to our human plane. That the millions and the hundreds of millions of us are just born, we grow, we die, flotsam and jetsam on the stream of life. But if we understand these things in depth, and remember, it has its counterpart in the other great religions too. The path of a Buddha is filled with unutterable woe, as said in the Book of the Golden Precepts. In the theistic offshoots of Hindu religion, Shaivism and Vaishnavism, you find Shiva as well as Vishnu both represented as drinking the cup, the poisoned cup of the world's sorrow to its dregs and transforming that poison in their own being. So you see, all this is involved. If we can see the practical significance of this, the renunciation of the pursuit of pleasure, this fever of the psyche because of ignorance, renounce that, relinquish the tools of pleasure altogether. Don't seek them. And the true pleasure, the true happiness, all true pleasure will come to you, into you, through the avenues of the senses. And all true happiness will well out of your innermost being, permeating your whole life.